The mole had been working very hard all the morning, spring cleaning his little home. First with brooms, then with dusters, then on ladders and steps and chairs, with a brush and a pail of whitewash. Spring was moving in the air above and in the earth below and around him, penetrating even his dark and lowly little house with its spirit of divine discontent and longing.
The Wind in the Willows by Kenneth Graham was an instant bestseller when it was published, and it remains one of the most beloved children's stories of all time. It's inspired everyone from the creator of Winnie the Pooh to Pink Floyd. There's a brand new annotated version of the classic, just out, edited by Annie Gauger, one of the world's leading experts on The Wind in the Willows. She told Steve Paulson that when Kenneth Graham wrote it, he tapped into something primal.
It's sort of a return to your bucolic roots, or a wish to get back to the land. And Graham, at his time, really wanted to get back into the country, into the land. He had become a Londoner for many, many years. And I think the same with our generation at this time now. We also long for the land and a small town in England or a small river bank, someplace close and not cluttered with traffic and noise.
Now, did this come from Kenneth Graham's own life? I mean, you said that he had spent a lot of time living in London. Did he himself spend much time out in nature?
Well, yes, of course. He was born in Scotland, in Edinburgh, and shuffled off to Cookham Dean in southern England. And there he was in this beautiful riverside town, very happy and content as a little boy. And then at the age of 8, he was then packed up and sent to Oxford to go to boarding school, which is very, very common in England and was at that time. And so if you've ever spent any time in Oxford, it's this big cake of a city, but it's little because you can walk 2 blocks and there you are in this cow pasture with a river running through it. So he really was very much surrounded by nature. He was then sent off as a young man of college age to get a post as a clerk in the Bank of England. And so he became a Londoner in the most industrial moment of being in London. He spent much of his adult life in those years, long before The Wind in the Willows, going back out into the countryside, going on walking trips, just to do anything to get out of that city.
And there's a long tradition in English literature of invoking the English landscape. I mean, there's almost a mythic quality to it, and Kenneth Graham seems to have plugged into that.
Yes, going out into the land. And of course, you have the rise of the automobile, which at that time only the very few had. But those very few who had that car just wreaked havoc on the countryside, which you see in Chapter 2, when the riverbankers get run off the road by a motor car and the horse upsets the cart and the cart is smashed. And then, of course, Mr. Toad is like, poop, poop, a car.
Isn't this gorgeous? I'm Toad the Terror, the Traffic Queller, the Lord of the Lone Trail, before whom all must give way.
So he's very much of his moment.
Now, I can't remember if it's Ratty who says that he's simply messing about in boats.
That's it, Chapter 1.
That's a lovely boat. Well, I like it. I've never been in a boat. I'm sorry? I thought for a moment you said you'd never been in a boat.
I haven't.
Bless my soul!
Why, is this so nice?
Nice? No, it's not nice. It's the only thing. Believe me, my young friend, there is nothing, absolutely nothing, half so much worth doing as simply messing about in boats. But nice? Ha! That's not the half of it.
And that's the water rat to the mole in the first chapter. Well, if you go down to a place in Cornwall called Foy, spelled F-O-W-E-Y, that is a place that Graham went in the year of 1899 to recover from a lung disease. And it's an absolutely astonishingly beautiful place, the way you might think the Outer Cape is. Only it's hilly and full of cows and walkways up the hills. But it's a place that is just dotted with little boats, hundreds and hundreds of them. And he made friends with a person named Arthur Quillercooch, or Q, as he was known. And they would boat every day. I mean, he'd get up and he'd run down that hill and they'd get in a boat and they'd be off and then they'd come back. And then Q just gave him one of his boats and whenever he could just go on out on that river.
So this is a river.
My dear Mo, if I may correct you, not a river, the river.
And you really live by the river? What a jolly life.
Yeah, by it and with it and on it and in it. It's my world and I don't want any other.
Doesn't it get a bit dull at times?
So there's a piece of just Kenneth Graham who was ratty. This guy who puttered about in the boat. I suppose probably also a piece who was Mole, who was more the homebody, the industrious, rather conservative fellow.
Mole is what Graham was. He was a clerk. You know, he's sort of a clerky person who's an underling who wishes to go about boating. I mean, you open the book and he's whitewashing his little underground house and he says, oh, hang it, off I go. And he does.
Hang whitewashing and hang spring cleaning.
Ah, up we go. Up we go.
Oh, the light, the air, the freedom.
Where do you think you're going, young mole? You can't come through this meadow.
Now, how did Kenneth Graham come to write the story? Because it's actually a huge departure from the previous books that he had written and published, and which were big hits, and this was something totally different.
Well, he had no desire to write. He hated writing, actually. It was torture for him. And along comes this woman, an American, by the name of Constance Smedley. Her editor, Cosgrave, from Everybody's Magazine, says, go get Kenneth Graham to write anything at any price. So she goes to visit Graham. She realizes that Graham's real story right now is this set of tales that he's been worked up with Alistair. He and Alistair have had this exchange.
Alistair
going
being
on.
His young son.
His son, Alistair Graham and Kenneth Graham have had this rapport they've worked up of storytelling, and it's gone on for years because you have to remember that Alistair is blind. He doesn't read necessarily well. So she says, well, there's your story. Why don't you write that up into a book? And Alistair, of course, was, yes, Daddy, please do. And so, of course, he did. And Miss Smedley took it to Cosgrave, and he, of course, rejected it flat. And then Scribner's son in America rejected it and said, oh, we've seen enough of these animal stories. Ick.
There's a remarkable story about how the book came to be published because various publishers had seen the manuscript, or at least a few chapters, didn't like
yep.
it. And then Scribner's actually got a letter from the President of the United States, Teddy Roosevelt, who
oh,
had
yes.
been sent a manuscript, and he loved the book, and he urged Scribner's to publish it.
Well, and this is part of the story, is that Roosevelt didn't like it himself. He didn't care for it a bit until his children and his wife got behind it. And then he was like, oh, well, I see what we're getting at here. Of course, this is marvelous. We must have it. And then he writes off to Charles Scribner, who is his friend and confidant, and Scribner publishes it.
Now, this book was very much the product of the relationship between Kenneth Graham and his young son, Alistair. I mean, Graham had read the stories or told the stories for years. Apparently, Alistair would ask questions, and it was kind of the product of what the two of them had together. But Alistair's own life ended rather tragically, didn't it?
It did end tragically. He was considered an enfant terrible, but you have to realize he was born handicapped, and he had very limited sight. But he was really kind of stuffed into that English public school system. And then he sent up to Oxford, and he just can't quite pass his exams, and it doesn't work for him. So he went out one night. He dined in Hall at Christ Church. That was his college, which is one of the most posh colleges in Oxford. And he gets a bottle of port, and he goes out to Port Meadow, where the train tracks are, and he lays down on the train tracks and commits suicide. And this is just a few days shy of his 20th birthday.
It must have been just devastating to Kenneth.
Devastating. I mean, there's a letter, set of letters between Quillercooch and Graham about the death and the loss of this boy and the grief. And after that time, Graham pretty much typed every letter that he wrote. He had the most beautiful handwriting, and his hand began to shake at this time. He developed tremor. So that's pretty much the story of the end of Alistair. Hmm.
Did Kenneth Graham come to see The Wind in the Willows as his great achievement?
Well, I don't think that he was a person who saw things as achievements, really. There's an account of him in Pangbourne, which is the last place that he lived. He lived in a place called Church Cottage. Pangbourne's a riverside town. And there's a couple of accounts of him about the children of the town saying, oh, we call him the sugar man because he's so sweet. And he was like gruff Mr. Badger. He wasn't interested in other people's children. You know, and he said to these children, well, I'm off to see the pretty little boats. And he just turned and walked away down to the riverbank to see the pretty little boats.
Listen, if you've nothing else on this morning, what say we drop down the river together and make a day of it?
What, in the boat? Together? Couldn't we? Could we really?
Certainly. Hop in.
Oh.
That's it. Careful. Oh. That's the idea. Now, first item on the agenda, a spot of provender. Put this hamper on your lap.
What's in it?
There's cold chicken in it, cold ham, cold tongue, cold beef, pickled gherkins, sausage rolls, cress sandwiches, ginger beer, lemonade.
Oh, stop, stop. This is too much.
Do you really think so? It's only what I always take. The other animals are always saying I'm a mean beast and cut it very fine. Comfy?
Rather.
Right. Off we go. I've never told anyone this before, Mo, but I'm a bit of a poet.
Well, I shouldn't worry about it. It's probably just a stage. I once had a shot at the trombone.
That's from Alan Bennett's BBC radio adaptation of The Wind in the Willows. And we heard Annie Gauger talking with Steve Paulson about her new annotated edition of the classic.